Whatever attention, criticism, feedback, analysis your essay had received prior to when Fox News decided to launch you into kind of a negative publicity stratosphere, so to speak.
Well, it was interesting to have my own Fox News program. I think they had one, what was it called? The Ward Churchill Factor, I believe. 31 segments of Bill O'Reilly focused on yours truly, which I have to say was a really interesting ride.
I bet.
200 odd hits in the Denver Post, 200 hits in the Rocky Mountain News in barely 60 days. Front page treatment. I actually got more space committed the day before the famous report to the Regents as a result of the investigation of whether I had overstepped speech boundaries. More space dedicated to me in those two papers than to the death of the Pope, if that tells you anything about the intensity of the spin that was put on in Colorado, and that couples to the Fox National and Clear Channel.
Mm-hmm.
The Capless and Silverman were talking about all Churchill all of the time, and all of that didn't work. It was sort of a test to see if this kind of saturation media spin, slant, bias, whipping up public sentiment could, in and of itself, affect a neutralization of a political figure, an academic figure, or a combination of the two, which I suppose I am. It didn't work. The wave came, the wave crested, it's abated, I'm still standing, and I'm not backing up.
Right.
I haven't backed up yet. I see no reason to back up. In fact, title of the talk out here in L.A. tonight is No Quarter.
Right. Yeah, and I do want to tell listeners that Ward Churchill will actually be at Claremont College tonight giving a talk called No Quarter, Academic Freedom and the Rise of American Fascism. It's tonight at 7 p.m. at the Bridges Auditorium. It's free admission. So if you're certainly out in the Claremont area or nearby, definitely go and check out Ward Churchill for yourself. It seems very much that the attacks that were launched upon you, while a great deal of it was launched with a lot of personal animosity, underneath it all, it was really created to set a room tone so that other academics, artists, activists, other folks wouldn't dare to speak out or dissent with the level of specificity and general indictment that you did.
Well, that's clearly the case. And it's been announced as such by Newt Gingrich, among others, on the Scarborough program, which is not Fox News, that's MSNBC. And, you know, it seems to be concurred in by figures like Polizan, who, of course, once was Fox News, but is now CNN. So you've got all three of the major cable news outlets in consensus on this sort of thing. The idea is to roll back voices that would be incisive in the sense that they unequivocally challenge orthodox interpretation, challenge the status quo, if you will, present radically or fundamentally, those words are almost synonymous there, alternative interpretation of the facts that form national policy and national sensibility. That's to be eliminated. And they said so. There's no role. There's no permissibility allowed in that. In fact, the function of institutions of education, the media and so forth, interfacing with it, but the functions of institution of higher education are serve as a glorified VOTEC. Basically, they picked up the old Clark Kerr notion of the use of the university, where the students are raw material and the workers who are the faculty shape that raw material into a product desired by the funders who are corporate in certain sectors of government, and that whole is presided over by managers who are the institutional administrations. Okay, there's certain critical skills that are necessary, require some advanced training. The corporate elites define the form those are to take, and the institutions are to crank them out. And while they're at it, they're to provide sort of soundbite indoctrination in terms of what is referred to as patriotism, so that you've got block cheering sections to the status quo, or at least no cognitive dissonance, so the business as usual will not be interfered with. You have the ultimate stability and the ultimate efficiency in terms of delivering the product of the overall enterprise, and that, of course, is profitability, what they euphemistically refer to as progress. It's essentially the logic of cancer.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind our listeners that this is KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 90.7 FM in Santa Barbara. I'm Jerry Quickly, sitting in for Susie Weissman. My guest today is Ward Churchill. He is a longtime Native rights activist. He's a leader of the Colorado chapter of AIM and the author of many books, including A Little Matter of Genocide, Struggle for the Land, and Indians Are Us. He's currently a professor of ethnic studies at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he'll be speaking this evening at Claremont Colleges in the Bridges Auditorium at 7 p.m. Admission is free, and he's giving a talk called No Quarter, Academic Freedom and the Rise of American Fascism. Professor Churchill, it really seems to me that one of the things that so incensed white America, and I will, you know, and I'll be specific about that, and it certainly doesn't include all of white America, but those that have come out against you, because I really didn't have any sense whatsoever within communities of color that there was this broad based attack on Ward Churchill. It seemed to be fundamentally racist, and at its core, I think really what you did was touch on and really annoy people by stating the fact very clearly that that America doesn't deserve and shouldn't have this notion and this fantasy of innocence that the right likes to put out, that basically we are this innocent, noble breed, and these people in the world who have done all these great things to lift up the world and those around us, when in fact that fantasy of innocence and nobility couldn't be further from the truth when you look at U.S. policy both domestically and also around the world. How much of the reaction that you got to your essay do you think was due to your transgression of that fantasy of innocence that, that this country often possesses?
Well, I mean, that's the core of it. It's like lancing a boil and then the pus splatters. And I very consciously set out to lance that particular boil and put it back in their face. And a subtext, if you will, although it's pretty overt in the essay, is I'm going to utilize the rationales and I'm going to utilize the very terminology applied to others habitually by the Pentagon in your name to your applause and see how you like it, see how it fits, see how it feels, and we'll see what your reaction is. Mm-hmm. The reaction was terrorism.
Right.
The reaction was absolute venomous hate. And that confirmed the overall point, which everybody was asking at the time, why do they hate us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the solution to this riddle of terrorism? How can people act this way? And my point was, you treat anybody this way. It doesn't matter whether they're Arab, they're black, they're really white American. You treat them this way or make them feel they're being treated that way, and they're going to respond. All of you are going to respond the same way. And good, patriotic, red, white, and blue Semper Fi Americans have borne that out absolutely clearly.
And because, in fact, if you go around the world, there's a huge numbers of folks that have very, very deep, very long-held problems and issues with America, not the least of which, just on top of my head, Egypt and Indonesia and Vietnam, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, Jamaica, Iraq.
Go to the chase. Name a country outside of Western Europe, and you got a contender for it. Now, it's going to be variable in terms of the magnitude of what's been done. The continuous tone in the background, however, is pretty much the same from place to place, and the bottom line is immiserating the masses of people in the name of profit and starving their children to death in a number of cases, quite literally.
Mm-hmm.
You want a solution to the problem of terrorism? And I will posit this. Stop killing their babies.
Mm-hmm.
You want to stop killing their babies so that you can have a new cell phone or a designer cappuccino? Probably they won't be inspired to do these sorts of things to get back at you. But when the information is as readily available as the cost and consequence of the American, quote, quality of life, that which Americans have divinely entitled themselves to enjoy, when that's known, when it's understood, and you get zero response in terms of changing policy or expression of outrage, the people whose children are dying are eventually going to give you back some of what you're putting out. Give you a taste of it, see how you like it. If you don't like it, maybe you'll change your behavior. That's the wake-up call. And if you persist, then they'll probably give you some more. And I'm not going to get into the notion that I'm advocating or justifying that. I'm simply pointing to the natural inevitability of it and pointing out that when you comport yourself this way in the world, you've got precious little basis for complaint when someone hands it back to you.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind our listeners that my guest is Ward Churchill. He's a professor of ethnic studies at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He'll be speaking tonight at the Claremont Colleges, giving a talk called No Quarter, Academic Freedom and the Rise of American Fascism at Bridges Auditorium at 7 p.m. Admission is free. Let me ask you, Professor Churchill, what do you think it will be required, or do you think it's even possible, to raise the consciousness and raise awareness of Americans at our impact on the world?
Well, I don't think there is a simple or even a single answer to that. I think it's a multiplicity of factors, and in part, it's the sort of thing they're doing in order to shut people like me up. And by the way, you were right in the first instance. I'm by no means alone. I'm sort of point man on this. I was selected for that role. I didn't select myself, but I'm even in that capacity as point man. I'm representative of a broader whole. There is Professor Alam up at Northeastern University. There's three Arab professors at Columbia University, and there's a much longer list. There's other people even in my own institution who've been targeted for elimination on the notion that what they say might offend the children of offenders. You're not supposed to offend offenders, okay, because that would be unfair. If you cannot offend the offenders, you can have no critical analysis, and that's exactly the point. And it's pretty raw, it's pretty open, the way they're framing this.
Mm-hmm. And for a little background for listeners who may not be familiar with it, in fact, the governor of the state of Colorado has sought to do everything within his power, legal, extra martial, and everything else, to have you removed. You had been chair of the Department of Ethnic Studies, and you resigned that chairmanship, and now you're professor there. And the state of Colorado has done everything in their power to remove you from your post at the university.
Well, that's correct. Bill Owens, who is the governor of Colorado, did do that, called openly for me to be removed. It was pointed out that would be illegal. It would probably open them up to vulnerability in terms of suit and so forth. He said, I don't care. Fire him anyway, and then we'll defend it in court. Now, partly, that's because of the virulently right-wing, that's not to say conservative, okay, there's conserving nothing. They're scuttling the Constitution as we speak, and the Constitution is what it is. It's supposed to be conserved if you're a conservative. So these guys aren't conservatives. They're neo-fascist radicals is what they are. Partly that's his ideological belief system coming to bear. Partly it's just purely politics. He needed a grand diversion because he's Mr. Family Values, and Mr. Family Values' wife left him because she caught him in flagrant delicto with his mistress, who was one of his staff. Okay, not very long before this began, okay, and it's reputed out there, and there was a lot of media chatter starting to develop about it just before my thing hit, and he focused on it so hard that he had a couple of illegitimate children. Now, it's hard to be Mr. Family Values and that kind of a character both at the same time, so he needed to take the attention off himself, and I was an ideal lightning rod for that purpose. Nonetheless, he's probably wrecked in terms of his ambitions to move from the governor's chair in Colorado on into Washington, D.C. He's carrying the taint of, moral virtue being corrupt or something along that line.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it served its purposes in a couple of respects. It served the Republican axis in Colorado in that same sense because he's their figurehead. Now, the figurehead is discredited on these moral grounds, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Then the party sort of carries the weight of onus that attaches to that. So it was, from the right perspective, in line with a pre-existing agenda, ideologically conforming to their pre-existing attitude, and a very useful political expedient to take the heat off themselves.
Now, let me ask you, Professor Churchill, there's a certainly your case is relatively unique in terms of recent American history, going back for the last 10, 15, 20 years, but it's certainly in no way unique when you go back to the McCarthy era and prior to that even.
Well, actually, it is unique in the sense that during the McCarthy period, you know, they may have aspired to be able to do the sorts of things that they're doing now, but they lacked the technological and coordinative capacity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The actuality is the sort of intensity of media focus that I was talking about is
new.
Unprecedented.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it's new. There was
right
no cable there.
Case. As I pointed out, I think it was sort of not just a textbook case from the perspective of the people doing it. It was a sort of a lab test. And it didn't really work the way it was intended to work.
Mm-hmm.
But The downside of that is that probably they're sitting there doing after-action assessments and correcting things that they did wrong, partly picking the wrong target. That was a fairly major one. I think they shot from the hip. They got something to go on, figured I was vulnerable, made their move, not realizing I just flat don't give a damn about the things they thought that I would buckle under.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so wrong call. I think they'll do a little more careful target selection next time, and they'll probably correct the sort of overindulgence they engaged in saturating the public sensibility with stuff too rapidly. They could have strung it out a little more than they did. And I expect you're going to see more targets emerge over the next year or 18 months that they're going to go after with about the same intensity they've gone after me in order to establish their precedence, but also to perfect the techniques. So, yeah, you've got antecedents in McCarthyism, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But the ways and means of going about things have evolved considerably since the 1950s.
Most assuredly. And along with that technological evolution, there's a much deeper ability to fixate on someone in a way that's even more sharp and more broad and more intense now than existed 30 and 50 and 80 years ago. But that process of identifying someone and publicly attacking them in order to destroy, discredit them, and more particularly in order to scare anyone from speaking out and dissenting in the way they did. There's certainly a long history for that in this country. What do you think it means now?
The show is very much on, and there's an upside downside, in my case, using it, since they've made it into such sort of lens for examining the whole. I will win. The charges they brought up now are so ludicrous and so transparently pretextual, I'm going to win. But it's going to be a win that occurs over an 18-month period of time in which I've been preempted from the main thrust of my work for now an entire semester, and we'll be fighting this sort of protracted battle with them institutionally and so forth for at least another year. And there's not too many people want to step up to having their life reoriented to that kind of a nonsense engagement over an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
With always, you know, they say only a fool goes to court, because it's a roll of the dice. Even when you got a winning hand, you can still lose. I won't, but all the other individuals that are standing in the queue out there, considering the implications for them, are not necessarily so confident of that.
Right.
And so if it can be avoided, they're going to avoid it, and quite reasonably so in a certain sense, but that's exactly what it's intended to accomplish. The way you avoid it is you constrain your speech, you constrain your analysis and so forth, and that's exactly what they're trying to do, is basically quell the discourse, quell critical thought, quell the ability to disseminate that thought, galvanize people, and create alternatives.
And why do you think that they're seeking to quell this? What is the agenda that you believe that they're rolling out now or would like to roll out that they would like to squash or silence dissent against?
Well, basically, it's this notion of order. I mean, the idea that there is a place for everything and everyone, and everyone and everything's to be in its place, and things are to be rendered maximally efficient in a certain sense. But most of all, just orderly, compliant. That allows for business as usual to occur with a minimum amount of overhead involved in quelling challenges to it or assaults upon it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sort of a regimentation of society beginning with the intellect. And they've been working on that for a long time. That's another thing that was lacking in the McCarthy period. Wasn't entirely lacking. They've been working on it for a while, and you had World War II and a propaganda offensive there, and then a follow-up into the Cold War, but it was in the formative stages. If I had a dollar for every email I've received that begins, "With free speech comes consequences," they've somehow or another hammered that into people's psyche, that you're entitled to free speech, but you have to be willing to accept consequences. Well, newsflash. That's logically absurd. If there's consequences, it's not free. It has a cost.
Right. I want to remind our listeners that this is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. I'm Jerry Quickly, sitting for Susie Weissman. My guest is Ward Churchill. He'll be speaking this evening at the Claremont Colleges, giving a talk called No Quarter, Academic Freedom and the Rise of American Fascism. That's this evening, Monday night, at 7 p.m. at Bridges Auditorium at the Claremont Colleges. I know we only have you for a couple more minutes, Professor Churchill, and I wanted to ask, what do you think Are there any examples of activists or grassroots movements or NGOs or any organizations successfully fighting this rise of Christofascism? Would you call it Christofascism? And secondly, do you see any victories that the dissenters have had, and where do you see those victories going in the future?
Well, that's a lot to unpack in a couple of minutes.
Well, whatever you can get to.
Crypto business, okay? The only reason they're crypto about anything is because we refuse collectively to look the reality in its face.
Mm-hmm.
They're just fascists. They're not crypto. They're right out front fascists. They don't call themselves that, but anybody with half a brain can see them for what they are, but that's awfully inconvenient and unpleasant. And it sort of dictates terms in how you engage them. And probably outright fascists are not going to respond to petition campaigns and candlelit vigils and moral suasion and all the rest of those time-honored tactics of the American opposition. They're getting extremely confrontational, and that means that in order to even hold ground, we've got to be prepared to confront back. It is confrontation, hence the title of the talk tonight, No Quarter. There's no ground to give here. They've taken all the ground. We're at the edge of a precipice. Now, either we start to fight back in terms that drive them back, or they push us right on off the cliff. It's really at that point. It's not a question of whether, if things keep going the way they're going, we're going to end up with fascism, and we're going to end up in a police state. We've been in a police state for quite some time, and the fascists are right out parading at this point, and it's about time we cognated that and start responding to them in the terms that are required to address the nature of the phenomena rather than what we would like to pretend it is instead. You see?
Yes.
And I see a rising sensibility. I've seen people respond to the nature of what's going on with me and in other connections in terms of their ability to translate into that into an attempt to prevent any kind of on-the-ground organizing for more substantive issues to be addressed. And so they'll take it on, and they'll take it on hard. But now we have to figure out exactly what hard means. Organizations, yeah, they're all over the place, but they're in a state of disarray, and even internal quibbles now about what the appropriate response would be. And by and large, we're going to have to iron those out internally so that we can get some interorganizational connections going so that we can pool resources and begin to develop some momentum going back the other direction. But until we accept the proposition that things are as they appear to be rather than something else, it's unlikely that that's going to be happening in the immediate context. Now, over the next 6 months or a year, if they continue to push the way they've been pushing, I think they'll do the organizing for us. People are going to be disabused of their pretensions that things are other than they are and be forced to confront. The best organizers we got are the right-wingers that are trying to step on us.
Well, my guest for this segment has been Professor Ward Churchill. He's going to be speaking this evening at the Claremont Colleges, giving a talk called No Quarter, Academic Freedom and the Rise of American Fascism. Professor Ward Churchill is a longtime Native rights activist, also a leader of the Colorado chapter of American Indian Movement, and the author of many books, including A Little Matter of Genocide, Struggle for the Land, and Indians Are Us. He is currently a professor of ethnic studies at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And Ward Churchill, thank you so much for joining us today on Beneath the Surface.
My pleasure.
All right, thank you. Take care now.
You too.